This is the Mind Your Business podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Mind Your Business podcast. My name's Matt Williams. As ever, I am joined by my good friend, Alan Clark. And Alan, this is going to be a belting episode. What are we talking about today?
Oh, what we are going to talk today about, Matt, is toxic workplace culture.
Oh my goodness, loving this. And this has come about because we saw a Twitter open letter to the MD of BrewDog from his employees, which was, wow, I don't know how to explain. How would you explain that letter, Alan? It was just bonkers.
Oh, it was incisive, it was articulate, it was emotional, it was a really good read. I must admit, I was left feeling really sad, really sad. I was trying to put a finger on the emotion, and it's sadness, real sadness, that is the perceived culture, according to the people that wrote that letter to the chief exec of BrewDog. Sadness.
It is, it's amazing. If you just look at some of the words that are used, there's lies, hypocrisy, deceit, there's a lot in there about staff being scared to even put their name to this letter because they just don't feel safe to give this sort of critical feedback. And there's a section I wanted to just highlight. So many of us started our jobs at BrewDog eagerly, already brought into the BrewDog ethos, only to very quickly discover that fast-paced meant unmanageable and challenging meant damaging. And I think that almost sums the whole letter up in one go, right? You can see that the management are trying to do something and they are failing, obviously failing at every turn. And the sort of level of background fear and distrust that comes through, and it's signed by 60 odd people have signed it, and then it says another 40 would have signed it but were scared to put their name to it. And you just think, just from the outside looking in, you can look at a business and think it's doing one thing. And we've talked about James Watts, who runs BrewDog, and I've got his book and I really enjoyed his book, and I've read it back again with a completely different sort of pair of eyes. And even when you read what he's doing, he's got a whole chapter that's titled Get People to Hate You. That's his he likes to be that kind of out there figure by the looks of it, and he's quite happy with everyone hating him. And when you look at his section on building a team, you can quote him as saying there's no such thing as a job for life anymore. You might as well be a zombie if you've got a job for life. You need to go in, do your work, and if you move on, you move on. And you think, it just, and once you look at it like that, it completely changes the narrative from being a fast-paced, dynamic, you know, in, out, done workplace to somewhere where you're lucky to survive 2 or 3 years before you're being binned off. And it just, I was absolutely amazed reading this letter. And then it got on to the conversations that, I mean, how dangerous is it to have a culture like that and not realise? Because that's how it all feels. It doesn't feel like the guys at BrewDog realised that it was as bad as it obviously is.
I mean, BrewDog aside, you know, we've read that, we've got some views, and actually just, it brings me back to last week's podcast about Ronaldo and two bottles of Coke and stock price plummeting. It's a similar thing. There's a brand there and then suddenly, oh, there's a different context. But, you know, I'm going to come right out and say it. You know, I think a toxic workplace culture is just plain stupid. It really is stupid. It's not a coachy word there, Matt, so I do apologise. It's not a classic Alan word either. But it's, I can't think of another word to describe it. It's stupid on so many levels.
I find it really difficult. And I've been in toxic work cultures, and even then I find it difficult to have the mentality of not looking after your people. And it's not me bigging myself up. I think the majority of people are like that. But you kind of, this isn't a unique one-off thing with BrewDog. There are stories you know, they're in the press about all the big boys, aren't they? Amazon have issues with their warehouse staff, etc., etc. But actually, if you go into small business, it's just the same. You can have really dysfunctional, toxic work environments in small businesses, and it just, you wonder, how did it get like that? Because it can't have been how they decided. Just no one writes in their business plan that we are going to get these people in and we're going to break their mental health and grind them down and then they'll leave and then we'll replace them with someone else. That's no one's actually, that's not the plan, is it? It's just, that's the byproduct of how you've led that team.
So I want to throw in something here just to mix it up, because we love these conversations, don't we, Matt? So there's two theories of management, right? Came out in the 1960s, 1970s. Very famous. Theory X, Theory Y. And pretty much, I would say they hold. Now, they're management. So Theory X is that humans are motivated by reward and punishment. Classic okay. Carrot and stick. So if I want my workforce to perform faster and quicker, then I will reward them with more money, more bonus, and make the consequences for underperformance more and more terrifying. Now, I've not worked in BrewDog, but that, I would suspect, that feels like a Theory X management yeah. report coming through there. Theory Y is that human beings are motivated by engagement, empowerment, wanting to do a great job and fanning the flames of that great job. Now, I've been in environments both extremes, right? I actually see how Theory X can work. I know it does work. It does work. And I see where Theory Y works. It does work too. An extreme Theory Y, everyone, it comes a big love fest and productivity probably goes through the floor. Yep, and I've probably even managed with my younger days a bit like that, right? So, you know, yes. But extreme Theory X is horrific for fear. Everyone's off sick, everyone's disciplined, you know, everyone's shopping each other in. If there's productivity, then it's by fear. You know, the sweet spot for me is absolutely, definitely more in the Theory Y than the Theory X, but a bit of situational mix-up depending on the context of the business and what's required and individual performance. But I think that's helpful when you look at toxic workplace culture. I suspect it's more in extreme end of Theory X.
I think I agree. I think certainly my experience of toxic cultures is definitely from an X standpoint. I mean, I think my overriding thing is a business coach once told me that a fish rots from the head down, and that's how your culture goes. Right, you will not find a dysfunctional workplace culture with a high level functioning leader. Like the people, if the top of the tree, that leader, if she's on it and she understands her vision and she's got clarity on what she's trying to achieve and she can build that culture, for example, it's very unlikely that the team below her are going to have this toxic environment that they're working in. Because she, you know, that in that example, she would be bringing the team along with her. Whereas, if it's wrong at the top, it's as much as the team may be paddling and trying to keep it going and trying to foster a team spirit and all of that, instantly, bad decisions, poor people management, completely takes the legs out from any culture at the bottom. Right? That's how I would, I guess, frame it.
I think that's absolutely right. You know, and the larger the organisation, the more complex it is, you know. So I might be the CEO with the best possible people behaviours and my heart and my spirit absolutely in the right place and a beautiful blend between challenge and support, absolutely. But then, you know, it's a global business. And you know, whilst I'm all encompassing in the boardroom, and maybe once a year in front of everyone for the conference. You know, the truth is that the company is run in different countries in different contexts with different human beings, and that becomes harder and harder to do. But you're absolutely right, Matt. The top leader having the best possible, getting the best out of people behaviours is the best possible start for creating a culture inducive to human growth and business growth.
And then it's the job of the leadership team to catch that. If you've got a big enough team that you've got their middle management, that would seem to me, middle management are they're so crucial to filtering the message from the leadership. If I was in a big, even multinational, multi-site, multidisciplinary business, my middle management would be the focus of how I would build the culture. I would make sure that those guys are 100% on it and aligned, because that's where the message can get muddled. You don't want one guy building an empire that is completely going off on a different tangent. And when we decided we were going to do this conversation, one of the questions I was going to ask you, and I haven't tipped you off about this, so you may give me a really quick answer, but hopefully not. In your former corporate life, you were a regional director.
Regional manager stroke director, yeah.
So you were in the leadership team, but your individual stores had their own managers running it their own way, I guess. Did you have, and I know, you know, you're not going to obviously go into names and places and details, but did you, you must have had some stores that were completely on it company culture-wise, and some where they were having difficulties, right? How do you manage that as a regional manager? And I'm sorry, I have 100% just sprung that on you. So
we absolutely did. You know, so the cultural report that came out twice a year was something called a Great Place to Work survey. And it was anything from 30 questions to 85 questions. And actually, at the end of that gave you a read. And you're absolutely right. You had a range from about 10 right up to about 95%. And it gave you a read to go in and do something about it. And the truth was that, you know, this is getting really truthful now. You know, even aside to what was said in that report, what really mattered was the most senior leaders' motivations towards profit and performance versus people, you know, and quite often a suboptimal report, or actually a really poor report, right? It's blatantly obvious that you'd rather be somewhere else than in that particular working environment, can be explained away if the actual numbers are in a decent place, you know, and that leader's more interested in numbers than people. So it's a kind of complex thing. But for me, I genuinely was interested in both, you know, really was interested in both. And my philosophy is still within coaching is we help the humans get to the best possible place and the performance will follow. I would go in there and you know, and have conversations that would lead to turnaround for sure. But, you know, there were some even within the same company that valued care and valued people, there was a huge discrepancy in the culture, and that's leadership. That was the person who was the leader within the four walls. It owned it, and if they didn't own it, that was probably part of the problem. But, you know, it was their leadership that had the biggest impact. So it's such a powerful thing, Matt, and you start with a leader and it can be completely turned around, and in a lot of cases very quickly.
That's fascinating. I've only done a little bit of retail in my career, but I do remember having in my first or second job, I was a bike mechanic, and for a national chain, right? And I remember the store manager, who's the guy that interviewed me and gave me the job and was like a god in his store. Mm-hmm. And I remember he was brilliant and the staff loved him and the culture was great and it was a really nice place to work, right? And then the regional manager came in one day and completely almost like took him out at the knees. Mm-hmm. Like he was stood up and he was talking to the whole of the staff before we opened and the guy just cut across him and just completely like... If he'd have said, you know, that bike's red, this area manager would say, no, it's blue, and this is why. And I just sat there, and even then, I was only 17, and I remember going away and saying to the other like the other lads in the bike section, you know, what was that about? He said, it's always like that. He said, he just can't let, that regional manager can't let anybody win. Like, he's, you know, he's got as far as he's going to get, and he doesn't want anyone to get any better than him. And so, you kind of, he's there, and he is just pushing everybody else down to him. And I remember coming away thinking, Christ, like, is that what it's like when you're a grown-up at work? Because I was still at school at that point. Like, and, you know, the culture at schools is to empower and push and let people thrive. So is that what it's going to be? I go out into the workplace and that's where you end up. And luckily, that guy was a complete one-off, right? And never met him again, never encountered him again, and quite happy. But that was my first ever experience of a regional manager, you know, and it wasn't a positive one.
I had very similar when I was 16, 17, and then through uni. I worked in a national DIY chain, and so that's a choice between two, basically, and it began with a B. I remember, first store manager, and these were decent sized units, you know, and, you know, never came out of his office. Probably in these days, because this was late 80s actually, probably smoked in the office, and the language was shocking, you know. And I'm from the east end of Glasgow, and I found it shocking, you know. And it was just, and everything was negative. It was all just swear words. And, you know, people were getting bullied and miserable. And I'm thinking, okay, so this is management. This is management. I've got to turn into an absolute thug. And that's the way to it. And then he went, and this other manager came, who was the polar opposite, you know. And he was out on the shop floor, talking to his colleagues, talking to customers. I mean, talking to customers. I mean, what a novel idea for a retail shop. And really interested, and of course found that suddenly the motivation went through the roof. I didn't know, I wasn't privy to it, but I suspect the business started to grow, you know. And it was a much better environment, and that was same workforce, same unit, selling the same stuff with the same customers, one person different, and it's chalk and cheese.
Exactly what I picked up from that conversation, and my one actually, it doesn't need, if you've got five senior people in a business, it doesn't need all five to be, you know, difficult people for the culture to be absolutely destroyed. It only needs one, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's, I mean, you can have this where you're managing a team and you have a difficult person in your team. You can have it bottom up, but generally that's easier to deal with. But if you've got a leadership group that aren't on the same page, that aren't trusted by their team or the wider business, or where you've got one absolute rogue element that is out there doing his own or her own thing, that's a really dangerous place to be. The power for one individual to undermine a business is phenomenal. It's more deadly, I guess, at a senior level. But you need to, as a manager, a people person, you need to understand the emotions and the personalities in your team completely and manage everyone individually. You cannot. The one thing I've learned from managing people for the last 10, 15 years is that you have to be a kind of social chameleon. You have to keep the message the same, but the delivery and how you bring people forwards with that message needs to vary from human to human.
I mean, you've got it totally. I would call that situational, and you're spot on. You know, absolutely spot on. So you get 10 out of 10 there, Matt, for sure.
I learnt it the hard way because yeah. I was part of a leadership team where the message was muddled. And we were in a big open plan office and some of the leaders would openly criticise the other leaders behind their back. And you're thinking, "How?" And the staff would come at you and say, "Well, he's on one today, isn't he?" And you sit there thinking, what is going on? Like, how am I, you know, are we having to justify, because it's, you know, a partnership, right? So we're all on the hook for everyone else's decision. So that's now my decision to do this crazy thing. Even though it was one rogue maverick that's gone off and made an absolute duffer of a decision. Mm-hmm. And you don't realise, I didn't at the time realise quite how much of that I was dealing with and how toxic the whole environment was until we had a report in one day. We're in a meeting, partners meeting, which we could do 5 podcasts on how dysfunctional that is, all those egos in one room. But we had this reporting that basically was like, you know, why are all our staff leaving? We've lost, like, I don't know, 40 people in the last 12 months. Good people, people we don't want to leave. And then we spent an hour and a half and managed to convince ourselves that the problem was with the staff and not with us. And what we were doing was fine. And I remember coming out of the meeting and saying to one of the guys, did that really happen? Like, because I'm not convinced. Like, and we were just joking about it the other week. Like, how do you... And the culture there was very much, even in the leadership team, it was senior and junior. And we were juniors. So we could have as much say as we wanted, but no one gave a toss. No one actioned what we did. So we had to sit there and watch them think, well, that's another duffer of a decision. And gosh, that's another duffer of a decision. And you think, what's going on, man? And the my point is, the staff, even though those meetings were behind closed doors, every one of the staff knew what was going on. So somewhere, it's like Boris Johnson's government, someone was leaking it to the press, right? And they knew what we were deciding before we even decided it. The amount of times another junior partner would come to me and say, do you know such and such has been made redundant or such and such? And I'd know. It's like, oh, the staff all know. How do the partners not know? And there you go. That's it in a nutshell, right? If you get the balance and the mix wrong and you're not all a united front as a leadership team, you're almost on a hide into nothing. And it comes down, and how can you expect a manager to build a team if the directors above him or whoever it is above him or her can't stay on message, can't build the culture themselves? You can't, can you?
No.
It's impossible.
No. And there's... we talked a few podcasts back about, with the amount of knowledge out there, why is not every business thriving? And, you know, for me, the amount of knowledge on how to create a thriving culture is out there. And even if it's in 3 points, usually first point is, I don't know, it's manners. Even that.
Just being, you know, a good human.
That's yeah. it. You know, that's it. And that gives you access to a better level of performance, you know. And yes, there's a balance between theory Y and theory X, and absolutely, and that's part of leadership development. But, you know, there's a very basic truth of treat people well, and they usually respond with a better performance, which is usually better for your business. And that's when I say toxic culture stupid. That's what I mean. I mean, I just think, how can you not get that? There's many, I mean, honestly, and going back to that letter and reading that letter, it's so unnecessary. So unnecessary, and yet it's there. And that's the sadness.
But their staff are more intelligent than you, that they're given credit for. In a toxic environment, the management generally assume the staff are all idiots. Like we had, right? It's not us. The problem's not us. It's them. They're idiots, right? They don't get it. And that came across in that letter to BrewDog, because it said, there's a separate paragraph that's just for the CEO. Like everyone else, this is just for you now. Do not try and fix this by bringing in a HR professional or a mental health advisor, because what's going to happen is they'll spend 6 months and they'll leave because you won't implement what they say. You need to fix this yourself. And you think, that's really powerful insight. The staff have obviously seen it before, and yet they're expecting that whatever they say is ignored because for the last however many years. And that's the danger, right? You can survey your staff, you can talk to your staff, very few people up and quit without telling you why they're going. And if you don't then listen to that feedback and take it on board as constructive, like your inner critic, right? You've got to sift through all the gripes and get the nuggets in there. If 30% of your workforce is leaving in a 12, 18 month period, there's an issue. Whether you like it or not, whether it's too much for your ego or not, there's an issue and you need to find out what the problem is and you need to fix it. That's common sense, but it isn't obviously common sense because there are too many business owners and business leaders that don't get that. So one other thing that I wanted to talk about, it comes back to this, so staff feedback. So one of the most powerful talks on people I think I've ever seen was from the lady that is the head of people at Xero. And I think I've talked a little bit about this before. So Xero, and I think this is really cleverly done, there is everyone from Xero, every employee, if you walk in their building, they all look the same. And they're very diverse as a workforce. So they don't literally look the same, but they've got the same Xero t-shirts on, the same kind of manner in there. You can meet someone from Xero. You go to their big conference, XeroCon, everyone with a Xero t-shirt on there is friendly and bubbly and happy, right? And the reason they've done this, and they call their staff Xeros, which if you take it the other way, literally means nothing, right? So to get past the point where people are happy to be classed as a Xero, and they are, they've got this massive employee engagement thing. Their culture is fantastic, and it's grown massively from like 2 in the UK 8 years ago to 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 in the UK, right? But every day, every single day, the last thing their employees do before they turn their laptops off is they do a little 10 second survey. Have you had a good day? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Have any of your colleagues been a star today? Write their name down here and say why. Job done. That's it. Every day. And they've got this, like, it's like a pulse. Every day at 5 o'clock, they can see it's an overriding positive or an overriding negative. And you just think, even with a team of, 10 in my team, how useful would that for me to know that one of my staff members has had 3 bad days in a row? And I don't need a scale of 1 to 10, I just need a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And then if I get 3 of them, I could go and manage that and put an arm around them and say, is everything okay? And that's such a simple tool, right? I don't think I've got any clients that do that. I don't do it in my business, and I should, but I don't. And have you got any clients that do that sort of survey?
No, not at all. And to be honest, it fits with 2021, doesn't it? You read an article and it's got a thumbs up or a thumbs down. That seems to be the way we do things in the 20s, is it's thumbs up or thumbs down.
Because it's binary.
So it's really, there you go. Therefore, you're getting a clean read. The context is that everyone understands, and you can do something with that. So that's useful. So, it's a great idea. Well done, Xero. That's phenomenal insight to have a conversation and turn somebody's experience round for them, and you don't have a clue what's going on for the individual either. In that workplace that you were describing earlier, the assumption would be probably that it's poor performance and there's something wrong with them, there's not a place for them here, blah blah blah, but actually, there could be something going on that you could turn around in 10 seconds of a conversation. No HR necessary. And then you get stellar performance back because actually the leaders cared.
I mean, I was talking, I can't name names because this isn't a particularly positive conversation, but I was talking to another professional, okay, who's part of a team, 100 and something in the team. And they were saying, how are you managing, like, the team remotely? And I said, well, it's not, like, genuinely, I don't think it's harmed our culture or our performance because we meet on Zoom every day. And he said, you what? I said, yeah, we have a team call every day. We used to have 2 a day at the start of the pandemic, but we dialed it down because it was too much, right? Like, the team were like, actually, we need to do some work in between these calls. So he said, do you know how many team calls we've had since the start of the pandemic? He said, I've worked at home every day for the last 16 months. I've had 1 Zoom call with the rest of the team. And he said, I've got 3 colleagues I've never even met. not even on a Zoom call. And it's like, and if, so, if, and they would be literally sat next to me. If I was in the office, they'd be sat next to me. So they're exactly in my direct team. And I'm sitting there thinking, I just don't, again, so where's this common sense in that? Who's thought that was the right way to manage people remotely? It's bonkers.
And if I can use Cypher and you just as an example to hang this all on, you know, Cypher is, I mean, you've not been in existence a huge amount of time. I know the size of your business. I work with you. Fastest growing accountancy in Oxford, and a leader at Oxfordshire, and a leader that takes both colleague astonishment and client astonishment extremely seriously indeed. And there's a correlation between your business growth and your team. A huge correlation. And that culture that you've created, you're the leader. So you've created that culture with your team. It's been a clear strategic intent to do so. And look at the business performance you've got on the back. And it's been resilient and it's grown through a pandemic. So if you ever need evidence that workplace culture is good for business, I would look at your business, sir. And you know, please, everyone that's listening, I'm laughing here and so is Matt, but there is real truth in that. And I've seen that in other businesses, of course. But I also see the correlation when the toxic culture's there too. And even if there is stellar growth for a little while, the wheels come off. They come off.
Well, of course they do. I mean, this guy, I said to him, I'm doing a podcast on toxic culture. And I said, I might use this as a story. He said, well, we haven't got a toxic culture. He said, we don't have a culture. He said, I haven't seen anyone for bloody 15 months. He said, I just get my jobs, I crack on with them, send them back in, someone sends them out to the clients and I get the next one. And you just think, I honestly just feel like there's more to life than that. Like, we're social animals, humans. How, you know, you wouldn't, that is a tantamount to, if you could, you know, non-COVID times, giving everyone an office in your big office block and not letting anybody walk around. So there's your office, you sit and you shut the door and you don't speak to anyone all day and then you go home. Like, that, is no one would do that, right? I cannot imagine even the worst company cultures have got that culture. And yet they've done that remotely. They've built that on Zoom. They've got all the technology in the world and people don't talk to each other. Just, there you go. And I've just seen the time. We've smashed through half an hour. I haven't covered half of what I wanted to talk about, but this is good. We won't go on too long because, you know, that's the joy of these podcasts, right? They're in, done and done.
Can I do something slightly that we don't normally do?
Are you going to sing?
No, I want to. I'll try and do this in 30 seconds, right? So I'm going to talk quickly. Our podcast 2 weeks ago called The Inner Critic. We got really into the inner critic and managing that inner critic as an individual. I was reading a book written in 1965 called Spiritual Depression, right? It came up in my feed, really interested in it, and it's a cracking book, right? And I'm only two chapters in. And chapter two, now this was a guy that was apparently very famous in 1965, a minister, but also a medical doctor. And he said that basically the self, the reason why so many people are so anxious and depressed and poor mental health is because they listen to self. They listen to themselves, right? And he said, what you need to do is talk to yourself. You need to actually say, why are you feeling like
push
this?
Push back. Uh-huh. Yes.
And manage, and he uses the word manage, cajole, whatever you need to do to sort of, he doesn't say this, but to take control back. And do not listen to this self, because you're going to end up in the one place. The trick, the key to happiness, joy, is to manage this self. And that was written in 1965. So I just wanted to reference that, because when I read it, I burst out laughing. I thought, wow. I just wanted to share it.
I love that. So should we do a quick recap? I mean, we've talked about toxic cultures, haven't we?
Yeah.
you explained the two schools of management, which I think holds up, theory X, theory Y. We've given some anecdotes about kind of toxic culture at different levels. So what it's like if it's at the boardroom, what it's like if it's at the middle management, area management, shop floor. And generally, we've come to the conclusion that you are basically stupid if you run your business with a poor toxic culture. And you may not know that you have a toxic culture, but your staff do. And I guess the moral of the story is talk to your team.
But brilliantly summed up, Matt.
Good. Right, we're at 36 minutes. We have to go. Those of you who are still listening that don't cut off when we get to this point, we've had so much positive feedback this last 3 weeks. It's been unbelievable to me. Our listener numbers are flying along. Our Instagram page is buzzing. LinkedIn's doing really good. Basically, thank you very much for listening. If you could drop us a comment or a like on our LinkedIn stuff or on our Instagram, all of that makes us really happy people. And it means that, which just means a lot, doesn't it, Alan?
Yeah, it really does. It's incredible to start to just realize the engagement in this conversation that's out there, and actually the positive impact it's having, and people thinking differently about different things, and sometimes it's feeling they're not alone actually, and you know, and getting the feedback back honestly is motivational. It is motivational. So thank you, and please keep it coming.
We'll be back next week with some more podcast gold. But for now, that's all from me, and that's all from Alan.
This is the Mind Your Business podcast.